Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography. Soundography is a crash course in music, one band at a time. My name is Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And one band is not enough. We need a whole year of bands. This is our every season tradition where we pick a year and then we look at music in that year, all the great music that came out that year, notable events, singers, songwriters, songs, of course, playlists, all that stuff. The year we've got this time around, 1979. And this is one that I thought, all right, you know, 1979, that'll be good. Then I started getting into it and I realized I used to think that 1984 was my favorite year in music. I think I might be switching that to 1979. Maybe not 1984, 1987. I don't know. I don't know what I used to think was my favorite year in music, but I'm almost ready to commit to saying 1979 was the greatest year in music.
I'm kind of like you. I used to hover around between 84 and 88 is my favorite period of time. Mm-hmm. But after going through this, there's a lot of landmark stuff and influential stuff and things I still listen to.
Yeah,
that are,
same here.
That came out this year. It's kind of crazy.
Albums that I consider to be my favorite albums by a band, right? Like, you know, say, oh, so-and-so band? Oh, yeah, you know, my favorite album by them is blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, that came out in 1979. So we're going to talk about all that stuff all throughout the show here. Really, really excited to talk about this because I want to convert people. I want to convert people who think that other years were good. No, people.
Testify, brother.
Testify. Amen, brother. 79 was the best year. Fight me. All right. Let's go ahead and get to it. And what we usually do is we do a chronology of the year. Before we get to that, you want to ask the question where we were in 1979.
Where were we in 1979, Brian?
It's 1979. Do you know where your children are? It was me and my mom living in an apartment in Wheat Ridge after her divorce with my dad and before she remarried to my stepdad. And basically this was kind of my life. I was a latchkey kid. She'd have to work, you know, ridiculous hours. So I'd get up, make myself breakfast, go to school, let myself back in at home, and then do whatever homework. I'm supposed to do homework, but clean, do the dishes, that sort of thing. And then she'd get home about 4 or 5 o'clock and make dinner. And so that was kind of my day to day during the school year. When the school year was over, to make things easier, I would go and live with my grandmother, and my uncle lived there as well, her son. And he was probably the biggest, not even probably, he was the biggest influence music wise on me in my life. So everything he introduced me to is stuff I still listen to this day: Elvis Costello, Squeeze, Sparks, bands we've talked about on the show, The Clash, all that stuff. So 1979 would have been one of those years where during the school year, I had my routine. And then over the summer, I'd go and live over there at my grandparents' house and just get exposed to all this great music. And boy, this was the time that I probably had the biggest cassette collection. I think I would have gotten, I know I got my Walkman the year it came out. And that might have been 1979.
Actually, Brian, if you read further in the notes, you're dead right.
All right, there we go. So yeah, so that summer I would have gone to California to see my other grandparents, my dad's side, and they would have bought me my Walkman, which pretty much I think, you know, all of these things just set me on the road to being Coverville Soundography music nerd dude.
I have to tell you that finding you in 2013 made me feel less alone in the world, because I felt like I was all alone and that guy who just learned about random stuff about music and bands and collected knowledge.
Yeah.
I thought I was one of the few, because, you know, it's not something you run into very often anymore.
It certainly wasn't in 2013. You'd have your music trivia guys all throughout, you know, all the time there's music trivia guys, but they're guys who run record shops or you know, work at Sam Goody telling you which CD, which Pretender CD is the best one to buy. But now that podcasting is around, we kind of all sprung up on the internet.
Yeah.
So, hey, I like music too.
It's very, very, it was very comforting to hand over the discs to you and have you go, cool, not, what the hell are you doing?
Right. Oh my God, all this Kevin Gilbert. So tell me about you. Where were you in 1979?
We had just, in 1979, we were living in Germany. We were, we were there from 78 to the, just about the beginning of 80. So we were living on base at Rhein-Main Air Force Base. We were living in Gateway Gardens. And I remember distinctly walking back and forth to school. There was a theater. So it, the layout of the area was basically these two streets that ran parallel that had the housing stuff on it. At the end of the two parallel streets was a little strip mall that had a movie theater and like a little convenience store and like a barber shop and a couple other little things. And then right behind the theater, there was an access road. And then you had the playground for the school. And then you had the elementary school I went to. So on days like when the Muppet movie or Empire Strikes Back or Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, you just leave school and go stand in line for the movie.
Wow.
And you'd have all your friends there so you could save spaces and go get food from the convenience store and, you know, kind of have a little group of people to entertain you for the 3 or 4 hours you were waiting in line before you sat through Indiana Jones or the Muppet movie. Or those are the three I distinctly remember, but there are others. So it was a fun time. And I think you and I, like I've said before, you and I had, I think, similar musical paths. And I think it was between 79 and 84, we started kind of figuring out, oh, right, I'm going to take this path and I'm going to take the other, you know, because I think we have a lot of things in common up to that early 80s, late 70s area.
I think so. You know, the style of music that we listen to, I think, is very different. Not very different, but you know, somewhat different. I think there are some interesting parallels music-wise, bands that we do have in common, the Venn diagram, the overlap. Mm-hmm. But I think where we got to that place was a very similar path.
I think so.
Which is cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, let's get to this. Let's go ahead and start talking about 1979. Month by month, January 1st, 1979, the Blues Brothers and the Grateful Dead play the last show at the Winterland Ballroom, which closed. Also on January 1st, Bruce Springsteen is injured when a firecracker is thrown on stage from the audience. Did he sing? I guess it's too early for him to be singing I'm on Fire.
He might have covered I'm Burning for You, though.
He might have, yes, exactly. January 4th, the Star Club in Germany, which has historical ties to the Beatles, reopens. American Bandstand premieres on ABC on January 6th. And features the first use of the YMCA gestures ever with a performance by the Village People. Really? So we can pinpoint the date that doing those little hand signals to symbolize YMCA.
Yep. From January 79 on, weddings were forever changed.
That's crazy. And I still don't know whether you're supposed to do the C. Like all the other letters are symmetrical. And doesn't matter if you do left or, you know, there's no left or right to them. They're symmetrical. But the C has to be done a certain way. Do you do the C as if you are looking, is it correct for somebody who's looking at you or from behind you?
See, you're making a really bold assumption that I actually do the gestures.
Have you never been to a wedding, Hammond?
I've been to two.
Yours, counting yours?
Yes. Two, both of mine.
Real? Wait. Hold on a second. You've never attended somebody else's wedding?
No.
Wow. Have you ever been invited?
No.
Or do you like? So you.
You're making other bold assumption that I have friends, Brian.
I know. Forgive me for the way I'm asking this, but like, you know.
When Stacy and I got married, we went to 6 weeks after we got married, we went to another wedding of some of our friends.
Okay.
And I am sure that there was YMC at that point.
There had to have been. Yeah.
But by the point that the YMCA was done, we were starting to pack up and get ready to go because we had to catch a flight to go back to Utah because we got in Vegas.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So there might be YMCA at some of the events I have been to, but I participate in the YMCA with the kind of gusto that I probably should.
Yeah, sure. No, I can appreciate that. Boy, can't wait for the episode of Soundography where we talk about the electric slide and the chicken dance.
I guess we could actually, you know, that actually brings up a good idea of one-hit wonders.
That supplied dances?
Uh-huh, yeah, or something along songs. Novelty songs where there's something novel about them, whether it be the Macarena or the electric slide or Hokey Pokey
or whatever. I think specifically one on dances would just be enough. We would fill up a whole show on...
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, the Macarena, what's that Friends in Low Places.
Or the boot scoot boogie.
The boot scoot boogie. Oh, God. All right. Anyway, hey, there you go. The Village People, January 6th, first use of the YMCA. I'm also surprised that American Bandstand premiered on ABC. Gotcha. Because it was somewhere else before. I know that Bandstand was on in the 60s and 70s, wasn't it?
I am not the Bandstand historical aficionado that you are.
I feel like I should be because I, yeah, there we go. Dick Clark, 1956 through 1989. And actually started in 1952, American Bandstand. So I guess it just moved to ABC from, oh no, here we go. Half hour evening version of American Bandstand aired on Monday nights on ABC from 7:30 a.m. So I think it maybe moved to a different
format
or something.
Yeah. I just pulled it in research. I didn't dig too far. I just thought it was great that I blamed Dick Clark for the gestures.
Yes. Well, if I told the story on Soundography about how my aunt worked for Dick Clark Productions, and so she took me to a day where they were doing taping of American Bandstand. They taped three or four shows all one right after the other. But Dick Clark goes and changes his suit between takes. And so we went down, we followed him down so we could keep talking to him between takes. And I sat there in Dick Clark's dressing room while he changed out of one suit down to his boxers and a button-up shirt. Like, he still wore the same button-up shirt, changed the tie, and changed the jacket and pants.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were briefed by Dick Clark.
Oh, well done, sir. Yes. we had a very brief encounter.
There you go. That's a better joke. That is a much, much better joke. You fixed it.
Sometimes these have to get workshopped.
Yep. You fixed it. That's the best one.
Man, but see, that would also have been around 1980, right? It was the big thing I remember about that year time-wise was that Atari's Defender had come out that summer. That was the big game. So I could probably figure out what summer that was. But if I would have known what I know now about music and, you know, just been the music nerd now or then that I am now, and I was a music nerd then, but I'm a way bigger one now. My God, I don't think I would have given him a chance to talk. I would have been so enamored with hearing about stories from, I would have been enamored with hearing stories about the Supremes and the Chiffons and, you know, those early days of American Bandstand.
Well, and not just American Bandstand, but early American radio too, because he was one of the original jocks. Yeah. So, you know, having those stories too about how radio was what powered the nation for a long time would also be cool.
Dude, if I would have played my cards right during that Saturday in August or whatever it was, July, I could have been Ryan Seacrest. Like, I could have become Dick Clark's protege and become Ryan Seacrest. Right,
that means I would have been your Dunkelman.
My Dunkelman. All right. Anyway, back to this. January 15th, MCA purchased ABC Records for $20 million. All right, let's talk about some notable albums that came out in January.
Okay, so Herbie Hancock released Feats Don't Fail Me Now. Elvis Costello and the Attractions released Armed Forces. Joe Jackson.
Which hold on, I'm going to interrupt. That is one of my five favorite albums of all time, Armed Forces by Elvis Costello and the Attractions.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, keep going.
Joe Jackson released Look Sharp.
Also a great album.
The Scorpions released an album. Accept. Frank Zappa. Sister Sledge. Rick James. Def Leppard released the Def Leppard EP. Mm. Eddie Money released Life is for the Taking. You know, UFO released Strangers of the Night. Another, you know, amazing live album. So, I mean, we're already off to a roaring start, and we're only in January.
And I think so. So Joe Jackson's Look Sharp, that would have been a debut album. Armed Forces was a second or third album. My Aim is True and This Year's Girl came out. Or no, My Aim is True and This Year's Model came out before that. So third album. Man, but a lot of debuts January 1979. All right, we're just getting started. February 2nd. Sid Vicious is found dead from an overdose the day after he was released from Rikers Island.
I think they just recently closed Rikers.
Did they? I've heard about Rikers recently, but I didn't know if that's
why. I think they recently closed Rikers, which tells you it's been a hellhole for years.
God, no kidding. Not like Alcatraz, which shut down, boy, like a dozen years ago, right? Like before 2000, I think, in the 90s.
Who, Alcatraz? No, yeah, Alcatraz.
Or was it even earlier than that?
Yeah, it was way earlier than that. It's been a tourist trap, and I think it shut down in the 60s.
Oh, really? That long ago? Okay, wow. I don't know why I thought it was more recent, but I guess you're right. Like, you see you see all the tourism stuff that happens with that. I guess that was back when I was like in the 80s. It was already a tourist thing, so never mind. Have you seen Sid and Nancy, by the way?
Gary Oldman? I have not. I'd love to. I really want to. I haven't had the... When I've wanted to, I couldn't find it, and when I could find it, I didn't have the time. So
I will let you know, because we talked about movies on the last episode about how there are certain movies and things you stay away from because you just don't need to see depression and addiction and all that stuff. There's a lot of depression and addiction and stuff going on in this. This is like train spotting about real people.
Well, and that's actually, you know, it's funny. There's also that documentary about Kurt Cobain that I've kind of steered away from because, you know, it's kind of rough.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be. All right. Also on February, on February 7th, The Clash started their first American concert tour.
Yeah.
February 7th, Stephen Stills is the first artist to record digitally. He recorded four tracks at the Record Plant in L.A. That's, boy, of all people to be the first one to record digitally, I would not have expected to be Stephen Stills.
That's like Neil Young deciding he's going to break out a digital recorder.
Yeah, it is odd. Like, you know, you connect them with acoustic and folk and all that stuff. I would think that 1979 first digital would be somebody like Blondie or, you know, some of these bands that are more electronic sounding.
Yeah.
Gary Numan, for example. Rod Stewart's Do You Think I'm Sexy reaches number one on the charts and stays there for 4 weeks.
I'm going to give a little spoiler alert.
Sure.
The top of the charts is dominated by one
spoiler
person.
Alert. No,
the top of the charts is dominated by one person pretty much from that 4 week period. He has it. And then someone else comes in and just overtakes and then sets all kinds of records for the rest of the year.
Oh, really? Yeah. Ooh. Okay. I can't wait to find out who. My guess would be, and I'm not scrolling. I promise. I've got my eyes closed. I'm going to say 79. It's probably later than I think Elton John had his biggest run in the early and mid 70s. I'm gonna say it was Billy Joel, maybe.
Just keep going, we'll find out.
All right, we'll keep going. All right, Rod Stewart. Okay, there we go. 11, February 11th, 43 million viewers tune in to watch Kirk Russell as Elvis on ABC. Wow. February 15th, the Bee Gees win four Grammys for Saturday Night Fever. Oh, this might be the Bee Gees. February 23rd, Dire Straits starts their first U.S. tour. February 26th, B.B. King is the first blues artist to tour the Soviet Union.
Again, really cool stuff happening in 79.
Totally. Now, Dire Straits, did they release an album in 79? I feel like they debuted in 1979.
Well, the Sultans of Swing was their first album. That's their first kind of big. That was their first album.
That was 1977, right? Yeah. Or 1978. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Let's go to the notable albums.
Okay. We have the Bee Gees have Spirits Have Flown. We have Split Ends with Frenzy. George Harrison releases his self-titled album. The Sex Pistols released The Great Rock and Roll Swindle.
Cheap Trick. That was a soundtrack to a movie that was produced by Malcolm McLaren, who was also producing the Sex Pistols at that time. That is a very bizarre movie. And there's about a 5 minute bit in there where they sing the song called Who Killed Bambi, but it's like Who Killed Bambi for about 5 minutes. I wish I was exaggerating. I'm not. Okay, keep going, please.
And then we have Cheap Trick released Cheap Trick at the Budokan. The Allman Brothers Band released Enlightened Rogues. Tangerine Dream released an album. Steelheart released an album. The Stranglers, The Skids, Stiff Little Fingers.
Cool. That Cheap Trick. I mean, can you hear the name of the city, Budokan, and not think of anything but Cheap Trick when you hear that name?
Actually, I can, because I have lots of albums of bands live at the Budokan.
Live at Budokan?
Yeah.
All right. I can't.
We've got Ozzy.
That's what I'm trying to say.
We've got Ozzy. We've got Dream Theater. Cheap Trick.
I feel like if you're a band and you perform in Budokan, great. Awesome. They you know, deserve live music. They probably have a great venue. You can't name your album so-and-so live at Budokan. I feel like once Cheap Trick did that, it's like
naming your movie T2.
It's like naming your movie T2. It's like going to Grauman's Chinese Theater and saying, could I put some cement over this Clark Gable Clark Gable handprint and put my own handprints in there? Thanks. You just can't do it. There's only one. You're not going to have the Jonas Brothers live at Folsom Prison.
You might. It won't have the same gravitas, though.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like once you can say Budokan Live with Dream Theater or something like that, you have to do it, or just don't put Budokan in the title. But Budokan and Cheap Trick are hand in hand because of that damn "I Want You to Want Me" and the screaming fans. Oh my god! All right, cool. March. Let's march on. March 5th, MCA dissolves ABC Records, which they had just bought 2 months ago for $20 million. James Brown on the 10th plays at the Grand Ole Opry. A few days later, March 15th, Elvis Costello gets into a heated argument with members of Stephen Stills' touring group after making unkind remarks about America. He was punched by Bonnie Bramlett and suffers a wave of negative press after the incident gets into the public. Oh, Elvis.
With a name like Elvis, you have to be a rebel.
I guess so, right? Yeah. I wonder what he was saying. This is something I knew there was a kerfuffle, but I can't remember what the actual comments were. I'm not going to go look it up. But March 27th, Eric Clapton marries Patty Boyd. She's the ex-wife of his friend George Harrison. And the subject of, what, like five songs?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Has any one person been the subject of so many songs? Oh, here's a list of 10 songs about Patty Boyd. And obviously the big ones, you know, are Layla and Wonderful Tonight by Eric Clapton. Apparently Something by George Harrison was written about Patty Boyd. I Need You Also by the Beatles about Patty Boyd.
Was Mindset on You about Patty Boyd?
Probably not at this point. I guess he'd moved on. Ronnie Wood Mystifies Me and Breathe on Me. George Harrison's So Sad. I guess that was him kind of getting over it. Eric Clapton, Wonderful Tonight. She's Waiting, also by Eric Clapton. That's crazy. Yeah. All those songs about Patty Boyd.
Yeah.
What makes her so damn special?
I have no idea.
March 31st, the Eurovision Song Contest takes place for the first time in a country outside Europe, Israel. The show is broadcast live around the world. The winning song is Hallelujah, sung by the group Milk and Honey, including Gali Atari 2600. A few months after winning, the song had been translated into more than 82 languages and broke a new record by entering the Guinness Book of World Records as the most translated song in the world.
And the most covered.
Well, that's not the Leonard Cohen.
I don't know. I didn't dig, so I guess I should have dug, but I didn't.
No, that's all right. I'm going to look it up right now. Nope, it's not. This is
Hallelujah. The sunshine above. Hallelujah. The bells will go ring.
Yeah, okay, well, that's an interesting song. I guess that was Gali Atari that I was listening to singing there. That is not, like, the backing song for the 30 seconds I just listened to, the accompaniment did not sound like it belongs with a song called Hallelujah.
Okay.
Just saying. March, notable albums. Hammond, what do we have?
All right, here's where things get interesting. right. Roxy Music released Manifesto.
Oh, good one.
Frank Zappa released his second album in 3 months with Shake Your Booty.
Oh, that's a good one too, Shake Your Booty. Yep.
Manfred Mann's Earth Band released Angel Station.
Okay.
Art Garfunkel released Fate for Breakfast.
Okay.
Bad Company releases Desolation Angel.
Ooh, another good one.
The Beach Boys release L.A. Van Halen releases Van Halen 2. Motorhead releases Overkill. Village People release Go West. Supertramp releases one of the greatest albums ever done, Breakfast in America.
Breakfast in America?
Yep.
Damn, that is a monumental album right there. Okay, good.
Average White Band releases Feel No Fret. The Tubes release Remote Control. BTO, Bachman Turner Overdrive, releases Rock and Roll Nights. The Sparks release Number One in Heaven, which is really the only place where it reached number one.
That's the album produced by Giorgio Moroder.
Yes. And then Graham Parker and The Rumor released Squeezing Out of Sparks.
Yeah, Squeezing Out Sparks, man. That was, they didn't squeeze out the band Sparks. They squeeze out the album Squeezing Out Sparks. I had to look on that one because this was like right around the time of the Angry Young Men, right? We had Elvis Costello, Joe Jackson, and Graham Parker, who as a threesome were UK's Angry Young Men. Mm-hmm. And this many years later, I don't know when the last thing that Graham Parker released was, but Joe Jackson just came out with a brand new album in the last couple months. And I think Elvis Costello's got something still to come out. I don't know how angry they are. Actually, I'll take that back. Joe Jackson's single that I've heard sounds like he's still angry. So good on you, Joe Jackson. Way to hold on to that.
stay angry, young man. Stay angry.
Stay angry. April 2nd, Kate Bush goes on tour. She becomes the first artist to use a wireless mic. That's cool. She has massive fear of flying. What is that? That's not agoraphobia. Acrophobia?
I guess
fear of heights. I don't know what fear of flying is. But so
Max Boeing 737 phobia?
Yeah, that's what it is right there. We all have that. So you never saw her, or if at all, rarely saw her come to America for a tour. She would only tour locally where she could get around to with a bus, which is a bummer because I feel like she is just seeing videos and stuff of her. I feel like her concert would be a spectacle. Like you could not look away from a Kate Bush concert. She's fascinating to me. Aerosmith, the Boomtown Rats, Cheap Trick, Ted Nugent, and Van Halen play to 110,000 people at the California Music Festival on April 7th.
Oh, imagine the way that smelled.
What a great show, though. Look at all those bands.
Yeah.
April 12th, Marty Balin is replaced by Mickey Thomas as singer for Jefferson Starship. April 24th, as part of a 1978 conviction for possession of heroin, the Rolling Stones and the New Barbarians play a show in Canada to benefit the CNIB, which is the Canadian Institute for the Blind. Why is it the CNIB? CN Canadian.
Yeah.
I don't understand how those letters work.
I don't know CNIB. Either. That's what it was, so...
Right. And CN, I know on abbreviations, you'll do CN as the two-letter abbreviation for Canada. So
okay,
I guess that's
sure
why.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Like the Canadian Institute for the Blind. And then April 27th, Ozzy is fired from his job as the singer for Black Sabbath. Ronnie James Dio is hired in May to replace him. All right. April notable albums.
So we have Simple Minds released Life in a Day. Journey released Evolution. Ooh. Squeeze released Cool for Cats.
Oh, again, one of my, well, we'll talk about it later, but I thought this was my favorite Squeeze album, and I was wrong.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Charlie Daniels Band released Million Mile Reflections. Now, you might not know anything about Charlie Daniels. That album has the Devil Went Down to Georgia on it.
That's the one thing I know about Charlie Daniels. So that's the album that...
Yep. Get this. On the 23rd, Bob Dylan released a live album, Bob Dylan at Budokan.
Doesn't matter. Cheap Trick did it first. Listen, you'll find no bigger defender of Bob Dylan than me. Like, you know, oh, Bob Dylan, one of the greatest, you know, the sad poet.
The mumbling wordsmith.
The mumbling wordsmith, but he is, you know, You got to name it something else, Bob.
Yep. Same day, ABBA released their album Voulez-Vous.
Voulez-Vous. They were huge this time of year, of course, with the disco and everything.
And then Donna Summer released Bad Girls. Lou Reed released The Bells. Mm-hmm. Emmylou Harris released an album. The Ramones released It's Alive. Pat Metheny released new Chiquita. Iggy Pop released New Values. And
a lot of new.
Yeah, a lot of new. And then Blackfoot released Strikes.
Okay. All right. I don't find myself, aside from Squeeze, I didn't find myself spending a lot of money in the record store in April.
There are a couple for me. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I'm a big ABBA fan.
Yeah. I didn't become a big ABBA fan until I got far enough away from the 70s to fully appreciate them, because I lumped them in with all the other disco stuff that was happening at the time, and I didn't realize the infectious brilliance of Anna Fried, Agnetha, Bjorn, and Benny.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that really stands out and proves that they are the geniuses that they are, is that nowadays you can have a bluegrass band, an acapella band, or a death metal band cover them, and within four notes, you know it's an ABBA song.
Yeah. Totally. This is true. This is very true. All right. May 1st, Elton John is the first pop musician to perform in Israel. May 2nd, The Who play their first show since the death of Keith Moon. May 8th, music critic Jeff Barton coins the term new wave of British heavy metal. We've talked about that before on this show. After a show where Samson, Angel Witch, and Iron Maiden perform. May 12th, disco music held 8 of the top 10 spots on Billboard's Hot 100. Peaches and Herbs Reunited, I guess it'd be Herb, Peaches and Herbs Reunited, led the way. All right, May 19th, George Harrison, Ringo Starr, and Paul McCartney performed at Eric Clapton's wedding reception. I guess John wasn't invited. Poor John.
He was too busy recording in his bed.
Yeah, exactly. Having a bed in and going to art galleries in New York with his girl Yoko. May 21st, Elton John is the first pop musician to tour through the Soviet Union.
Wow, guess where his tour led him? From Israel to the Soviet Union.
Right. In Russia, tour performs you. all right, May, tell me about some...
An unprecedented third time in 1979, Frank Zappa releases another album called Orchestral Favorites.
Okay.
Then The Cure releases Three Imaginary Boys.
Yeah. Was their debut.
David Bowie releases Lodger.
Okay.
Saxon releases Saxon. Smokey Robinson releases Where There's Smoke. Diana Ross releases The Boss. Kiss releases Dynasty, which we will cover later.
Okay.
Dolly Parton releases Great Balls of Fire.
Oh, sure.
ELO releases Discovery. James Taylor releases The Flag. Michael Nesmith releases Infinite Rider on the Big Dogma.
Yeah, he's the former monkey, Michael Nesmith.
And I just finished that book on MTV, the MTV Uncensored book, about the golden years from like 81 to 91 or 92, whatever it is.
Cool.
It's great. It's a fantastic book. I didn't realize how tied up in MTV Michael Nesmith was.
He was doing music videos before they were considered music videos. He had this thing called Elephant Parts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all of these little short form skits or performances set to music. So, I mean, there were a lot of people who were doing promotional music videos, you know, that sort of thing. The Beatles even had a few of those. But
he was way wrapped up in MTV.
This was pre-MTV, and then he just kind of bled into MTV. I didn't realize how involved he was with that.
And then Godly and Cream was also super involved in MTV's early years.
Yeah, well, they were producing so much stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, their production. Have we done?
We did.
I can never remember if we.
For you, got to listen to this. We did the one with the big harmonica.
Oh,
on the cover.
Right, the harmonica. Yeah, right. Okay. Good old Godly and Cream.
So then, Kansas released Monolith. Riot did their album release Narita. So, you know, at least they didn't do Live at Budokan. They just need to.
Thank you. And the world thanks you for that.
Then Rick Wakeman released Rhapsodies. Steve Hackett released Spectral Morning. Steve Hackett, formerly of Genesis. And Ted Nugent releases State of Shock.
Nice. All right. Now we're getting into the summer. June 1st, Jello Biafra, frontman for the Dead Kennedys, a guy I met at the South Park Music Festival and talked music for a little while. He establishes Alternative Tentacles record label. Yes, I guess I did just drop a name. June 9th, the Bee Gees joined an exclusive club when they had their sixth consecutive number one single, U.S. single, in less than a calendar year on June 9th.
So they joined the club, consisted of Bing Crosby, Elvis, and the Beatles.
I think because of a hit they had in the 90s, I can't remember what it was, they had number one hits in four different decades, which is another record that I don't think anybody else has done. June 16th, the single Hot Stuff from the album Bad Girls by Donna Summer makes her the first female to hold the number one single and album for the second time. Bill Haley on the 28th makes his final recordings at Muscle Shoals. And a little more from Donna Summer. June 30th, she continues to make history by being the first female to have two of the top three songs on Billboard chart. They will stay at the top for 4 weeks. Aha, I see what you're saying.
The entire top five was occupied by female artists at that time, though, which is really cool.
Wow. So Hot Stuff, Bad Girls, what's the Last Dance probably also came out this year. I mean, that probably was just a big album for her that had just tons of hits. June, tell me, hit me with some notable albums.
Oddly enough, I don't see Frank Zappa in June.
He took a break from releasing his monthly, like his album of the month club. All right.
Good. So the Jay Giles Band released The Best of Jay Giles. Okay. Wings released Back to the Egg. Earth, Wind, Fire released I Am. Nick Lowe released Labor of Lust.
Yeah.
The Knack released Get the Knack.
Yeah, that was their big, like that thing went huge.
Yeah. The Cars released Candy-O. Dire Straits released Communique.
Okay.
Hawkwind released PXR5. America released Silent Letter. Joy Division, Unknown Pleasures. Then there's Blue Oyster Cult. Queen released Live Killers.
Not a Budokan.
No, not a Budokan. Let's see. Leon Russell released Life and Love. Robert Palmer released Secrets, Carly Simon released Spies, and Carole King released Touch the Sky.
Okay. Oh, some great albums in that list, too. Communique. I'd forgotten about Dire Straits' Communique. I think so much about making movies and Brothers in Arms that...
Yeah, and for me, I think Sultans and Swing and then Brothers in Arms. Those are the two I own. Those are the only two I feel like they've ever done because I feel like we need to cover them.
Making movies, I think we need to do Dire Straits. I think we need to put them in the next season. But that album, Making Movies, as many hits as Brothers in Arms gave us, I think Making Movies is a much more solid album. I'm putting it on my list now to listen to today.
Wow.
Yeah, I need some Dire Straits Making Movies in my life today. All right, July. July 1st, like we talked about, the Sony Walkman is released in Japan. Brian would get one from a San Francisco music store about 3 weeks later for my birthday present from my 10-year-old birthday present. I'm about to turn 10 in 1979 in July. My grandparents would buy it for me.
And interpersonal communication was never the same.
I know. Right. My inability to talk to people and just kind of wall up in my Walkman would start from this point on.
And just think, that Walkman affected the way you took that train trip with the Posies.
In England. Yeah. Oh, right. Kind of right, because that was a CD Walkman, but still, it was... Yeah, that album... So that summer, my grandparents took me to San Francisco. We drove up to San Francisco from Los Angeles, where they live. And they bought me the Walkman, but it didn't come with any tapes. And all my grandparents had was classical music cassettes. So I basically had a Walkman, but no cassettes. The only pop music cassette they had was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. So guess what album I listened to for the entire six-hour round-trip drive from Los Angeles to San Francisco. That's, I don't know how that, why that make, or how that ranks Sergeant Pepper's on my list of favorite albums, but it's up there, and it's up there because of the memories of that.
I love that album, except for the sitar part.
You don't like Within You Without You?
Yeah, it's not something, I'm glad it's there. It's just not something I can endure too many times.
As I can't either. I hate to say it. And I love George Harrison, but that's usually a song I skip. Sorry, Shankar.
That actually makes me feel much better about myself after last week, knowing that you feel the same way about that.
There's another one on another one of their albums that I can't get through. There's Within You, Without You, and then there's another very similar sounding song that has those same Eastern sitar influences. And I think it'd be fine
if it was shorter. Imagine me saying that.
I like the lyrics.
Yeah.
I just can't. Yeah. With a little bing, bang, 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 going over it. July 7th, 1979, the Bee Gees play a sold out show at Dodger Stadium. July 10th, Chuck Berry is given 4 months of jail time for tax evasion. Jail time or whatever.
Yeah.
July 12th, Disco Demolition Night. This was a promotion by Chicago Rock Station. I remember this. This was at whatever the ballpark is there. Is it?
What is that?
Fenway.
Fenway's in Boston.
Oh, Fenway's Boston. That's right. It's.
I saved you a bunch of emails. You're welcome.
Well, you're going to edit this all out. because I can't remember the name of this, because I even did a 3D print of the sign at Wrigley, freaking Wrigley Field. Wembley, Wrigley. I was thinking Wembley, and I was like, oh, it's in the UK. It's definitely not Wembley, and I was confusing that. But there was this, you can leave all that in. Leave it all in. I don't care. I'll take the slings and arrows. They did this thing where people brought disco albums, and in the middle of the field, they had a big pile of them, and they were setting them all on fire, like a big bonfire, and people would throw their disco albums into the fire.
And the footage of this is shown all the time.
Yeah,
this is always shown, and it made it seem like it was a national movement to burn disco. Really, it was just Chicago.
I know my uncle hated disco, and because my uncle was my music influence, therefore I hated disco. And I didn't come around on disco until the early 90s, when I was starting to do wedding DJing, and I realized that I could pack the floor when I played some disco songs. Would get everybody out there, yes.
I do think disco was starting to go on the decline, but as we go through the rest of the year, the charts didn't reflect it for a while.
No. Yeah. It was disco creeped into the early 80s. And it was funny because it started influencing bands that didn't normally have a disco sound.
Spoiler alert. We're going to cover that.
Are we going to talk about that? Okay. Are we going to talk about the Rolling Stones and Undercover of the Night?
We'll get there, but you can bring it up
Emotional Rescue.
Yeah.
Was there. Okay. We'll talk about it later.
I promise you can bring that up when I bring up mine.
Okay, I promise I will. July 14th, Donna Summer scores another number one hit, the third in 8 months, with the song Bad Girls. There it is right there.
She gained and set so many firsts with this album, Bad Girls, and with that album throughout this year. I mean, it's kind of astounding that we took this long for someone to come along as a female and just start blowing the lid off the record business.
And it didn't seem like she ever got out of disco. Like, we never heard about, once disco was done, we never really heard as much about Donna Summer after that, right? I mean, we heard about her before, of course, the Love to Love You Baby and all that. Oh, her real name is LaDonna Adrian Gaines. I didn't know that. I should know that.
Mother to Chris Gaines.
That explains so much. Six singles from this album: Hot Stuff, Bad Girls, Dim All the Lights, Sunset People, Our Love, and Walk Away. For whatever reason, I was thinking that The Last Dance from Thank God It's Friday was part of this as well. Did that movie come out? I think that movie came out earlier than 79. I can't remember. But that, again, produced by Giorgio Moroder.
Mm-hmm.
saying the guy, what the guy touches, everything the guy touches turns to gold. Mark that as another one for us to think about for future Soundographies, Giorgio Moroder. Because okay. then we can listen to that new Daft Punk album.
Okay.
Or newish. July 31st, 250,000 people attend a James Taylor concert in Central Park. It was a free concert as part of a campaign to restore Sheep Meadow. All right, July, let's talk about albums. Big ones, hit it.
All right, Neil Young and Crazy Horse released Rust Never Sleeps. The B-52s released their self-titled album. Huh? The Kinks released Low Budget. Mike Oldfield released Exposed. REO okay. Speedwagon releases Nine Lives. AC/DC released Highway to Hell. Put your mind around that.
That's the there you go. That is the pinnacle of July 1979 for sure.
To put your mind around the fact that that album is still played on like modern rock stations.
Oh yeah.
And it was released in 79.
Wow.
Devo releases Duty Now for the Future.
Okay.
Joan Baez, Honest Lullaby, The Commodores, Midnight Magic, James Brown, Original Disco Man, and Kris Kristofferson released Shake Hands with the Devil.
Oh, that does not sound like a title. That sounds like a heavy metal album title. Kris Kristofferson, Shake Hands with the Devil. All right. August 1st, Elton John and Bernie Taupin reunite after a 3-year break. August 2nd, Brian Abbott turns 10. August 18th, Nick Lowe and Carlene Carter are married. We'll talk about this more later on in the show. But that makes him Johnny Cash's stepson-in-law. Because she was June Carter's daughter before she married Johnny Cash. August 25th, My Sharona by The Knack reaches number one. This is the first time in over a year that a non-disco song or ballad topped the Billboard list in over a year. And Doug Figer made the late great Doug Figer made the mistake of saying, "We're going to be bigger than the Beatles."
Yep.
Whoops.
Yep. And it's funny. I remember My Sharona not because it was number one, not because it was a hit that year, but because Weird Al did My Bologna.
Oh, really? Okay. Boy, I remember this being, I had that album. I had this because it had Good Girls Don't. It had My Sharona. Great album. All right. August.
All right.
Not a lot of monumental dates, but tell me about some monumental albums.
So Talking Heads released Fear the Music.
Boom. Big album.
Michael Jackson released Off the Wall.
Oh, okay.
Chicago released Chicago 13.
See, with Chicago, I like their commitment to sticking to the whole number thing.
Yeah.
But you can't hear that album title and think, oh, that was the one that had blah, blah, blah on it. Like, you know, it's not like, you hear the Talking Heads Remain in the Light. You're like, oh, yeah, that's a great album. Oh, 13 by Chicago. 13 was was big.
Yeah, 19 was no, 19.
All right, what else?
Ecstasy released Drums and Wires. Bob Dylan released Slow Train A-Comin'. Zeppelin released In Through the Outdoor. Bette Midler released the soundtrack to The Rose.
Now, In Through the Outdoor, I'm going to go back to that one here.
Okay.
Because is that the album where they had, it came in a brown brown paper bag, like it was a sealed brown paper sleeve that the album cover came in.
That's the one.
And you took off the album cover and there was a, do you remember those? And I think they still have them. Those, it's like a painting thing for kids where all you have to do is wet a paintbrush. You don't use any paint, but you wet a paintbrush and then you just run it on the album cover or run it on the paper and it colors everything because the dots are made out of paint. I think I'm confusing two things because now I'm looking at it, it's like, okay, yes, there was a paper bag. They did have a paper bag sleeve.
And it did have a paint swipe over the middle of the album thing.
It did. But the killer was that there were several different album covers printed and you bought it basically sight unseen because you had to pay for it. You just basically bought the wrapped cover. So it had several, how many different album? Four, I think, because my uncle wanted to collect them all.
It was wrapped in plastic.
Wrapped in plastic. Let's see here. It was the inner sleeve featured black and white artwork, which, if washed with water, would become permanently fully colored. Okay, so it's the inner sleeve that you could do that with. The outer sleeve had six different pairs of photos, one on each side. So, okay, so I was remembering this correctly. Yeah, I conflated the two.
Yeah.
So the inner sleeve, the sleeve that the record goes into, you're supposed to get wet.
Oh, how times have changed.
No kidding. And then the outer sleeve was the six different variant covers, basically. And I knew, you know, George was one of these people who wanted to collect all six album covers.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I guess
$20 an album, $18 an album back then, that's expensive.
Yeah, it is. He's committed to us in the outdoor.
He is. And I wonder if, I'll bet if you've got the, like one of the original ones, maybe there were some that were hard to find. If you've got one of those and an unwet.
I was going to say, eBay probably has an unwetted copy for $1,500 or something.
I'm going to look right now. I'm curious. Because this fascinates me. I love, dude, I love gimmick albums.
Yeah. And we're going to bring that up later in this episode too. Oh, no, it's next week. Next week that it does.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, here we go. In Through the Outdoor. Brown paper bag. Oh, so somebody's selling just the brown paper bag that the album came in for $7.99. This one is $6.50 for both the album and the paper bag. Yeah, there's definitely, looking at this, there's definitely a very common photo, which is the one that's on Wikipedia, which is the guy sitting. All the photos, by the way, are of the same scene. It's the guy sitting at the bar burning a Dear John letter. It's just there are six different angles that the photo was taken.
Oh.
It's brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant. I wonder how many people got the CD and tried to wet the CD to see if it would smear. Anyway, all right, that's so cool. That's one of my favorite novelty ways of delivering a record ever.
Yeah.
Do you have more albums?
Yeah,
I interrupted
yeah.
you on that one.
The Alan Parsons Project released Eve. Pat Benatar released In the Heat of the Night.
Debut, I think.
Yeah, Shalimar released Big Fun. Randy Newman, Born Again. Van Morrison, Into the Music. And Jimmy Buffett, Volcano.
Cool. Oh, Volcano. Good old Jiffy Muffet. Jiffy Muppet. All right, September 1st, INXS perform for the very first time. U2 enter the studio for the first time also to record. ABBA starts their tour called ABBA the Tour in North America. September 16th, Rapper's Delight is released by the Sugar Hill Gang. My friends are going to try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike and I like to say hello. Up to the black, to the white, the red and the brown, the purple and yellow. But first, I got to bang, bang, the boogie to the boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the bang, bang. Over the course of September 19th through the 23rd, a series of concerts called the No Nukes concerts are held in Madison Square Garden. Jackson Brown, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Bruce Springsteen, Bonnie Raitt, Tom Petty, Carly Simon, and James Taylor all participate. The albums from those, by the way, or the album from those concerts is great. Some great stuff on there. And September 27th, Elton John collapses on stage. He refuses to cancel the show, and after 15 minutes, he resumes.
And he's a performer. He's not going to quit. He's going to
change
a performer. His glass.
He's dust like off him and Dave Grohl, man.
Yeah.
Right? Dave Grohl, I'm going to break my leg, and then I'm just going to
get a wheelie chair.
Carry around.
Get a wheelie chair and keep going.
Exactly. All right, September albums.
Let's see. Cool and the Gang released Ladies' Night, which might not have been I don't know if it was a huge hit, but it was everywhere.
It was everywhere, yep.
Aretha Franklin released La Diva. Susie and the Banshees released Join Hands. Gary Newman, The Pleasure Principle. Cliff Richard, ooh. Rock and Roll Juvenile. Foreigner, Head Games. Jethro Tull, Stormwatch. Oh, hey, another Zappa album, Joe's Garage, Act One.
Oh, really? But see, that's amazing to have not just, you know, all right, so we can release five albums in a year. But Shake Your Booty and Joe's Garage were huge.
Yeah.
It's not like he's cranking out one great album and a bunch of like filler.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. Wow. And
Judas Priest released a live album called Unleashed in the East, which if you're going to do an album, that might be the way you do it, is list the direction, not the location.
Yeah, right.
Foghat released Boogie Motel. Cheap Trick did the Dream Police.
Oh, that's such a good album. I can't believe I didn't pull anything from that onto my playlist.
U2 released three. The Eagles did the Long Run. This was a big month. Barry Manilow.
U2 released three. So like the month after they enter the studio for the first time. Or no, the month that they enter the studio.
Yeah, it was just an EP. It was just an EP.
Still.
Yeah.
A three-song EP. Yeah. Dudes.
Yeah.
My dudes.
Yeah. Barry Manilow, One Voice. The Buzzcocks. Singles Going Steady as a compilation album. Uh-huh. Leonard Cohen released recent songs. Let's see here. Bonnie Raitt.
That's an album title, by the way, that becomes a lie after 6 months.
Yeah. let's see. Bonnie Raitt, The Glow. I did that. Kenny Loggins. Or I'm sorry, not Kenny Loggins. Kenny Rogers releases Kenny. The Village People released Live and Sleazy. It was a double LP. Mm. Santana released Marathon. Reba McEntire released Out of the Dream, which I'm sure she yells, sings along, and then the music stops and she yells Out of a Dream and then kicks him.
Out of a Dream! Yeah, sure.
And then Sammy Hagar releases Street Machine.
Wow, cool. Yeah, so many debuts, too. Like, we talk about the great albums, but a lot of these were debuts for folks.
Except for Zappa, who was already five albums in at the end of the year.
Not only not his first album of the year. All right. October. I like this one a lot. October. October 10th, Joe Perry leaves Aerosmith. Tell me about some monumental albums for October.
Well, hang on. Let's do this. Spoiler alert. He returns. So he didn't even... Yeah. It's not even that monumental of a news article. Right. It's he left, and then he comes back later.
That's funny.
But in October, the albums are, let's see, Slade released Return to Base. The Police released Regatta de Blanc.
Yeah.
Bob Marley and the Wailers released Survival. Joe Jackson releases I'm the Man. The Who, Quadrophenia. Tony Banks releases Curious Feeling. The Boomtown Rats. The Fine Art of Surfacing.
Oh, that's another good one. Except it's, you know, Fine Art of Surfacing... Got to be an inspiration for Nirvana's Nevermind as far as the album cover. Hold on a second. Fine Art of Resurfacing. For some reason, I'm remembering that album cover. Yeah, it's basically...
It's a drawn adult version of the Nirvana cover.
It's a drawn, exactly, complete with...
Dan Glenn Wiener.
With a unit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just so that we're clear.
Yep. Fleetwood Mac released Tusk. Elton John released Victim of Love. Blondie, Eat to the Beat.
Oh.
Rick James released Fire It Up. Styx releases Cornerstone. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Damn Their Torpedoes. Madness, One Step Beyond. Prince.
Two great debuts right there.
Yeah.
One Step Beyond and Damn the Torpedoes.
Prince releases a self-titled album. Prince releases a self-titled album. The Specials released their self-titled album. Oh, a lot of ska coming out.
Yeah, and the Specials, that was a debut, and that was a great debut.
Cher releases an album. Motorhead releases Bomber. ABBA releases Greatest Hits Volume 2.
All right, listeners, are you getting turned around, 1979, greatest year in music?
Yeah, hey, here we go. Here's this, too. I'm just going to list the people who had albums come out, and then you can tell me what you think. There's the Bee Gees, Marianne Faithful, Sweet, Molly Hatchet, Midnight Oil, Leo Sayer, Toto, Ann Murray, Kenny Loggins, Whitesnake, Human League, Bette Midler, Barbra Streisand, and Status Quo. All also have albums coming out that month.
Damn. All right. Yeah.
And Molly Hatchet is Flirting with Disaster, which is really, that's the only really Molly Hatchet song people know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the only album cover they know. And it's just some incredible Frank Frazetta painted artwork, too.
Mm-hmm.
I had to look and see. I know we talked about Communique by Dire Straits before. I get to see what the Lady Rider was probably the big song from that album. But that's really the only one that I recognize. Lady Rider on the TV. Anyway.
That's more of a Bob Dylan.
I kind of did Bob Dylanize it, didn't I? Lady Rider on the TV. All basically Bob Dylan is Mark Knopfler with emphasis.
Diction. With diction.
Right. We gotta move these refrigerators. We gotta move these color TVs.
And then, all right, you know, well, sadly, yeah. Tom Petty falls into that now as he's gotten older, too.
Well, he fell into that.
Yes. Yeah. Now he's fallen deeper.
He's
now.
Dead now, Hammond. Too soon. No, that was the thing with Traveling Wilburys. You had to really pay attention to know if it was Bob Dylan singing that verse or if it was Tom Petty singing that verse.
And they all needed subtitles in the videos.
They totally did. Yep. Everybody needs somebody. All right. November 1979, on the 3rd, Donna Summer, the first, another record, the first female artist to have 5 top 10 hits in 1 year.
So she had the same number of hits as Zappa released albums.
Both of them are impressive.
Yeah.
I got to say, yes. November 26th, Bill Haley and the Comets play a command performance for Queen Elizabeth in London. This was his final recorded performance of Rock Around the Clock. And on November 30th, Pink Floyd releases The Wall. This was Mic drop.
Yeah. This was a huge deal. The Wall was one of those albums that my parents bought and came home and just said, shut up and listen to this. Don't talk to us till you're done.
Yeah.
And I did. And my head was totally blown. My mind was totally blown by what I was hearing because I'd heard nothing like it.
It's one of those albums that I wish I could make Tristan sit down. I probably could have done this years ago, but now there's too many other things he's got to do. But I want to sit down for 2 hours with the lyric sheet and mm-hmm. just like I did, big, massive headphones with a curly cable connected to the hi-fi.
Yep.
Listen to the Wall in its entirety while reading the lyrics.
Well, and I remember, too, that I didn't see the movie until I was in college that goes along with it. And when I saw it with the film, it actually changed it, and I don't know if it changed it in a good way, because in my head I had far different things than what they showed me, and I think seeing the movie changed it for me. It weakened it in a way, because now they were telling me what I was seeing in my head.
Yeah, but I mean,
wrong.
Don't music videos do that anyway?
Yeah, but for some reason this one stuck with me. It's kind of like you took away my images, how dare you.
Yeah, well, they did such a great job though of incorporating those amazing drawings from the, you know, of his mother and his wife,
marching hammers and just the symbolism.
Yeah, exactly. And just recreating those in the movie and the animated sequences, which were great. And now I can't hear the schoolmaster or the headmaster without thinking of the guy from the movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying that in my head,
you had a different thing.
Yeah, which took it away from me and made it them again instead of mine. It was important for that album when I first saw it to be mine.
I wonder how much was Roger Waters happy with that movie or not?
I don't remember.
Because I feel like he would do that. He would basically feel like Alan Moore did about the Watchmen movie. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this is not my vision. This is not what I wanted. Or...
How dare you put Leonard Cohen in that scene?
Exactly. Or it's like, this is exactly what we won't worry about it, because it's funny. I'm having a hard time finding it because it's a hard search.
Yeah, it's a hard search.
It keeps
thing.
Coming up with. There's a newer movie called The Wall, and if you look for Roger Waters' The Wall, you find a concert film that he did called Roger Waters' The Wall,
which is very cool to watch.
The concert film?
Yeah, because The Wall, because I think during the first half of the movie, The Wall is constructed, and then the second half it comes down, or something happens, he's performing in front of a wall.
This is the one that he did at in Berlin with Paul Carrick and all these great musicians. I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, I think we talked about it That's on the cool. show a long time ago.
I want to say we did. I want to say Van Morrison was part of that.
What year? Because I think we talked about it in a year show, actually.
Oh, did we really?
Yeah.
All right. So The Wall came out. What other, you know, what lesser albums came out in November of 1979?
So The Damned released Machine Gun Etiquette, which won't mean much, I guess, to a lot of people. But Damned is one of those bands that had a lot of influence in certain circles. Willie Nelson released Pretty Paper, which probably meant Rolling Paper, even though it says it's a Christmas album. I'm sure he meant
it's
Rolling
Paper. Willie
Papers.
Nelson. Yeah. Come on. We know what it means. Yeah.
Iron Maiden released the Soundhouse Tapes EP. Aerosmith released A Night in the Ruts. Emerson, Lake & Palmer released...
By the way, A Night in the Ruts, it took me forever as a kid to figure out. I was like, it's like a spoonerism of right in the nuts. Which, you know, that's absolutely what they were thinking when they named it that. Yeah. Or that song, I can't remember which heavy metal band, but they did the song If You See K. Subtle.
Yeah.
All right, keep going.
Oh, my gosh. I just saw this. Okay, so Emerson, Lake & Palmer released In Concert. And then Frank Zappa released Joe's Garage Acts 2 and 3.
Oh, right. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
At Budokan.
Yeah. Then Public Image Limited released Metal Box. Mike Oldfield released Platinum. ZZ Top released Deguelo. A Little Feet, Down on the Farm. ELO's Greatest Hits came out. M released New York, London, Paris, Munich. Simple Minds released The Real to Real Cacophony. And Dr. Hook released Sometimes You Win.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Also, that No Nukes concert that that we talked about earlier came out in this month, the Triple Live LP.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good one. Some great covers on there, actually. December, Iron Maiden signed with EMI. December 3rd, a crowd stampeded at a Who concert in Cincinnati resulted in the death of 11 people and injures another 26. The band was not informed of the incident until after the show. It reminds me, it's like that's the Who. Isn't that Altamont? Isn't that
the one where the Altamont's the one where the Hell's Angels.
The Rolling Stones?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the Rolling Stones with the Hell's Angels.
There was another one, though, that happened in Salt Lake where there was a crowd festival seating and a couple people were crushed. And that Salt Lake City actually put an end to festival seating after that event.
Gotcha. Okay. What else do we have? We have Iron Maiden's initial drummer, Doug Sampson, was replaced by Clive Burr. And December 31st, on the 8th annual New Year's Rockin' Eve, Dick Clark hosts the Oak Ridge Boys, the Village People, Chic, Blondie, and Barry Manilow. Oh, so good. All right, December. What are the big albums from December?
So Motorhead released their debut album, On Parole. The others were just EPs. The Clash released London Calling.
Sid. Oh, big.
Yep. Sid Vicious releases Sid Sings.
Sid Sings, yeah. The
end is yours. I don't know much about this band, but I love the name. Throbbing Gristle releases 20 Jazz Funk Greats.
Yeah, they're... punk.
Yeah.
Even their
Color Me Surprised.
Now. Yeah, right. Okay.
And then we mentioned them, Christopher Cross releases Christopher Cross, and then Chic releases Les Plus Grands Success de Chic, Chic's Greatest Hits.
Okay. I'm wondering if Le Freak was on that album by Chic.
Probably. And there's a ton
name another great hit by Chic.
Yes.
Or by
Chic. A ton of other albums that were released this year that don't have like actual months listed. Spyro Gyra had an album. Muddy Waters had an album. B.B. King had an album. I mean, lots of things, but they just didn't have. Oingo Boingo had their demo EP come out.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, there are lots of
Electric other Cat on the cover.
Yeah. There are lots of other things that Eddie Grant did Walking on Sunshine.
How did I not put an Oingo Boingo song in my playlist? Ashamed of myself.
We've already covered them.
We did, but I still, they're one of my favorite bands.
Here's one. Jerry Goldsmith releases a soundtrack to a movie. What movie?
Whoa.
What movie was
1979?
It?
1979?
Yeah.
Ordinary People.
Nope. Bald Chicken Space.
Bald Chicken Space. Oh, Star Trek, the motion picture. Nice. That's way more appropriate for Jerry Goldsmith than Ordinary People. Just saying. All right. There is your year in notable events. Hammond, tell me about some of the biggest singles of the year.
All right, so some of our biggest singles, we had Heart of Glass, I Will Survive, Pop Music, Hot Stuff, and Born to Be Alive. And then in musical theater, which was kind of a big deal still, it still is a big deal, but it was wasn't quite as niche as it feels like it is now, but there was Ain't Misbehavin', Evita, The King and I, The Oklahoma Revival, Sweeney Todd, and Tommy.
Very cool.
And musical.
All right. Musical films.
Musical films that came out that year. All That Jazz, Hair, The Muppet Movie, Rock and Roll High School, The Rose, and Brian's favorite, Skate Town USA.
My favorite movie of all time. So All That Jazz, I had to look it up because I remember it being, for whatever reason... Oh, I'm thinking of The Jazz Singer.
Yes, that's The Jazz,
Jazz Singer. Jazz Singer, yeah. Jazz Singer was the one with Neil Diamond. And yep. I want to say that, that was a remake of the first talking motion picture.
Yes, and it was a... And they changed it, I think, from being... Well, he really leaned into the fact that he maybe he didn't. I don't know. But Coming to America, Robert E. Lee, all great songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Right. None of, All That Jazz and The Jazz Singer, two very different things.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yep. All right. Let's do it. Let's get to our playlists. This is where we, for our year shows, we pick 10 songs, any artist, any album, as long as it came out that year. And now, before, I'm going to do a little bit of setup here because when you're hearing this is not when we record it, obviously. Right now, as we record this, my library is down. My iTunes music library of 110,000 songs is down. So I had to do some manual generation of playlists on Apple's music to get my playlist, which is why I didn't get Oingo Boingo, and why there's no song from The Wall in my list, because I just realized that was also 1979. But this is still, in my opinion, this is still a stellar list, and as soon as my library is up and running, I will actually make this playlist. Because
actually, I will say that between the 20 songs we hit,
yeah,
I think we did a good job of not just covering the year, but covering styles and genres.
Yeah,
and
I think so too.
We did a really good job this time, completely independent of each other. I think we did a killer job.
For sure. All right, let's get to it. First song on my list is Heaven by Talking Heads. In the lyrics, David Byrne says that in heaven, they'll play your favorite song and that nothing ever happens in heaven. But I think in heaven, they'll play this playlist. This is what's going to be on constant repeat in heaven for me. It's such a great song. And yeah, I mean, there's bigger songs on Remain in Light, but this is such a great song. And if you've ever seen Jonathan Demme's, what's it called? Is it called Remain? It's a Talking Heads concert film. My mind keeps going to True Stories, and I know that's the later one that came out. Hold on a second, because I want to get this right.
It's called Look Who's Talking.
Look Who's Talking Heads. it is called Stop Making Sense. Of course, it's called Stop Making Sense. And it's got to be one of the greatest concert films ever made because it makes you feel like you are at the concert. I don't remember any shots of the audience. Like, you know how sometimes you get shots of the audience.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time you are basically, it's like you are in a center front row seat watching the show. And it comes out with just David Byrne and a tape recorder and a guitar. And the tape recorder provides rhythm for him. And he does a couple songs. And I think Heaven is one of the songs that he starts with. And, man, it is, it's that and the band's, The Last Waltz are probably the two greatest concert films ever made. And anyone who disagrees, I want you to fight me.
Well, I will say that I really enjoyed Metallica's, Through the Never.
Okay.
Which is very new and hopefully we'll get to
it. Yes, it is very new. It has a story through line to it.
It does. And I very much enjoy it. It's visually stunning. It's beautifully shot. I think it's good. I also think that Duran Duran movie, as weird as it is also pretty interesting.
It's very interesting. The David Lynch one?
Yeah.
Yeah. No argument that it's interesting.
I just felt the need to pull it back up because I had to call it back because It was one of the earliest shows we did, and I just remember how weird it was.
Well, I'm going to make a recommendation right now. And I don't know if it'll still be available when this episode comes out. So I'm making this recommendation to you, Hammond. Stop Making Sense is on Prime Video right now. So if you have Amazon Prime, I believe you can get that, right?
Okay, yeah, we could do that.
I recommend you watch it. It's so good.
Okay.
Either you'll hate me or you'll thank me.
I'm sure I'll thank you. I like talking heads.
It's got 97% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
It's an hour and a half, and you know what? It's fun.
Yep.
Okay. So that's my first song. Second one is Train in Vain by The Clash. When we talked about The Clash and Big Audio Dynamite, of course, I talked about this song, and it was on my list then, too. I'm including it here again, especially for the fact that on London Calling, you buy the album, you look at the track list on the back, you won't see Train in Vain. That's because it was added as a track that they added last second to the album, and it's one of the best things from that album. So I'm so glad that they slapped that onto the end. So if you've got one of those original London Calling albums that doesn't list it, that's a cool little rarity. We talked about the B-52's debut album. Roll it over in your mind. And everybody talks about Rock Lobster, and it's an okay song. For my money, Dance This Mess Around is even better. It's the spiritual successor of Robin's Dancing on My Own. Same plot to this song as well. Cindy Wilson, she screams on this track, and it's so powerful and so heartbreaking. And at one point, she compares herself to Stinky Cheese. I'm not no Limburger! Number four on my list is Atomic by Blondie. Blondie's sexiest song by far, even though it's kind of like it was influenced by spaghetti western guitar. And we talked about Giorgio Moroder so much on this episode. I thought that this was also produced by Giorgio Moroder, and it was not, but it's got to be influenced by him for sure, especially that middle instrumental break. And it's by the way, coming up with the lyrics for that, it was all like nonsense. So like at one point Debbie Harry goes, "Oh, your hair is beautiful." That was like blah, blah lyrics that when they were writing the song, they had that in there. It's just like, okay, we need new lyrics here. And they never changed it. They kept it. Your hair is beautiful. We talked about XTC. Their Drums and Wires album was came out this year. 10 Feet Tall. I'm walking right at 10 feet tall. I feel like I'm walking right at 10 feet tall. While you say I'm faking and I say, This song has got such cool, twisty, turny chord progression and melody. Every time I listen to the song, I hear something new, which is something to be said for a song that is like 40 years old. It's crazy. Speaking of that whole new wave that I'm just like entrenched in, One More Time by Joe Jackson. His debut album comes out. This is the first song on the debut album. So this was the first thing. If you got that, you brought home that Joe Jackson album, plopped it onto your turntable, put the needle on. This was the first thing you heard. And this is the angriest track on the album. It's like a breakup song, bar none. And it is so raw and visceral and angry. And then it's followed by "Is She Really Going Out With Him?" which is a great song, but boy, it's like, it's the punch and then the ice pack after the punch. It's so great. Speaking of angry young men, "Green Shirt" by Elvis Costello. Everybody, you know, again, that album had so many great hits. "Accidents Will Happen," "Moods for Modern," stuff like that on that album. But "Green Shirt" is one of those songs that got recognized after it was, like, well after it was released, as being one of the greatest Elvis Costello tracks of all time. And the story is that Niccolo produced it, and he and Elvis Costello were out drinking the night before, partied a little bit too hard. They walk into the studio. Elvis has no voice in his upper register, so he has to do the whole song in a lower register. Niccolo even just said, "Do it, record it, I don't care," and gave him a glass of orange juice. And Elvis Costello basically spent the whole recording holding the orange juice up to his forehead, the cold glass of orange juice up to his forehead. and recorded it that way. And it's such a great song. There's this drum beat. I'm going to hold up my coffee here. This drum beat in there, that's this, like, right? It's like that. Mm-hmm. And in the monitor headphones that he was wearing in the studio, he told Niccolo, "Can you turn that down?" such a bad hangover that it came out to be such a great song. So that song, as I mentioned, produced by Niccolo. We talked about how he got married to Carlene Carter, Johnny Cash's stepdaughter. "Cruel to Be Kind" was the big hit, kind of the big breakout hit for Niccolo. The video for the song was shot at his wedding to Carlene Carter, and they shot some of the video, and then they had the wedding, which he was late to because of the video shooting. But, like, his parents and Carlene and members of the band are like his chauffeur and the minister and stuff like that. It's a great, talk about a great way to have a wedding album, is mm-hmm. to make it a music video. We talked about Squeeze in an earlier episode about Squeeze, so I had to have a Squeeze track on here. Cool for Cats came out this year, and I thought it was my favorite Squeeze album until I started rating all the tracks, and I found out that "Argy Bargy" was my favorite. Shattered my whole world. But still, on this album is one of the greatest story songs ever written, a song that tells a story from start to finish, and you love it. It's called "Up the Junction" by Squeeze from Cool for Cats. And then finally, "The Wait." From the debut album by The Pretenders, or Pretenders. Here's the thing. Hammond said, "I think they're just Pretenders, not The Pretenders." And I had to go back and look. I'm sitting here. I've got four albums in my hand right now from Pretenders. One of them says The Pretenders. The other three say, well, this one's just called Pretenders 2. And it doesn't say the name of the band on there. But so I don't know. I don't know if they're The Pretenders or just Pretenders, but I've got albums with it written each way. Anyway, the song is "The Wait," and again, we've got some singles. What's that?
We're waiting for them to make up their mind.
That's right, exactly, and quit pretending already. The album you know, it's got such great songs as Brass in Pocket and Kid and Stop Your Sobbing. Great Kinks cover right there. But it's The Weight that feels like it's raw and rocking and is basically what Chrissy Hynde symbolizes to me as just this rocker of a, I mean, she is a rock goddess. You know, she's one of those people that is just like, she's got the hair, she's got the look of just being this rocker. And this song exemplifies that. So The Weight by The Pretenders. All right, there's my 10. Wake up, Hammond. It's time for yours.
All right. I started with Van Halen's Somebody Get Me a Doctor from Van Halen 2. This was my first Van Halen album, and it kind of changed the way I looked at all kinds of stuff, because I was shocked by what was happening guitar-wise, and it was pretty aggressive for the time, and it wasn't disco, but it wasn't like anything else. And Van Halen kind of played a role in my life, you know, through the 90s. So this was it.
Yeah.
Then I picked I Was Made for Loving You from Kiss, from their Dynasty album, which I refer to as the Kissco album.
Yeah, for sure. Like, this is what we were talking about, how there were so many rock bands who were like experimenting with disco to try and either reach out to a new audience or whatever.
I think stay relevant might have been the case. It was a desperate ploy to stay relevant, I think. I want to lay it at your
Emotional Rescue by the Rolling Stones is another one that I think of as part of this, for sure.
Yeah. I'm glad that Kiss did not try to do the grunge stuff, because I just don't think they would have been able to stay relevant through that.
Oh, geez. Yeah,
but no. I Was Made for Loving You is definitely a disco song, definitely done by Kiss, and oddly enough, it's probably one of their better-known songs of all time, which I don't know what that says, but it says something.
Right.
But yeah, go find your Kissco album, everybody. Then I picked AC/DC's Highway to Hell. Like I mentioned earlier in the show, I cannot get over how old this song is and how it is still played on rock stations today as if it just came out. I was listening to the terrestrial radio station just the other day, taking my car in to get some work done on it, and I was surprised at the number of songs that they're playing that came out pre-1989, mm-hmm, in relation to songs they play post-1989. And Highway to Hell was one of them. And it was just, I'm like, this song is really old now, guys. Let's pick other ones. I'm not saying it's a bad song. I'm just shocked at how relevant it still is.
Yeah, it still is, though. And it's still, I can't imagine going to an AC/DC concert and them not doing Highway to Hell.
Yeah. I can't imagine going to a football game and not hearing Highway to Hell.
Right, yeah.
The next one I picked was Eyes of the World by Rainbow. And I had to put Rainbow on because they laid the groundwork and the trail for so many bands to come ahead of them or come after them. And, you know, Dio ended up going from Rainbow to Black Sabbath. So, you know, it's one of those bands that people need to become more familiar with. If they're not, because Ritchie Blackmore is an amazing guitarist and songwriter. And they really were super influential. And if you don't know more, don't know about Rainbow, go do some homework because it's really worth your time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then I picked Foreigner Head Games. This is one of my favorite pop kind of hard rock bands of all time. And there's so many good songs, Jukebox Hero, Head Games, you know, and he had such a distinctive, really good rock voice for the time. And Head Games is just one of those kind of pop rock songs you can't help but get into. Then I picked, I repeated myself a little bit too. I picked Iron Maiden, I picked Prowler. I know we've covered Iron Maiden, but kind of like the Ghostbusters rule, if Iron Maiden is available, you pick Iron Maiden.
Sure.
So, you know, Prowler, it's pre-Bruce Dickinson, but it's still, it's Iron Maiden, so you kind of give it the respect it's due. Then I picked the logical song from Supertramp, and you have to love Supertramp. I have appreciated them for so long, and they are so influential. And that Greatest Hits album that they put out back in the early 90s, mm-hmm. I listened to the crap out of that thing. It was on all the time in my car, and it has influenced so much of my musical taste because the lyrics are good, the songwriting is good, the instrumentation is interesting, you hear new things. Supertramp is, I think, kind of underrated, and I wish that more people would be. Maybe more people are, and I'm unaware, but I feel like we need to talk more about Supertramp in our daily lives.
I agree. And you know what? They'd be a great one for us to do on this, on this podcast.
Yeah. I think I fully agree. Cause I think that's something you and I both agree on, Supertramp.
For sure. Yeah. Let's make sure that we add them to our list.
Okay. Next I picked Pop Music from M. This is a great example of what electronic popular music was going into and dictated a lot of what, you know, Depeche Mode, Erasure, all those bands that would follow. This kind of set the template for it. And I have very specific memories of this song. I remember being in a van driving on the Autobahn, listening to this song on my way up to some camping trip with Boy Scouts or something, and we were all singing all the cities and trying to figure out why he picked Munich instead of Berlin or Frankfurt. He must be from Munich because you always put the city you're from to give it respect. I mean, we were trying all of those theories because Paris, London, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Munich doesn't fit that line as far as I was concerned. It does because of the music ties.
You know, but it's got the, you say Paris, London, Munich, but you don't, Berlin, Frankfurt, the emphasis on the second.
Frankfurt would have worked.
Frankfurt would have worked, yeah. But you put the emphasis on the second syllable in Berlin, so yeah. that one would not have worked.
Stuttgart would have worked.
Stuttgart, yes, okay, that would have worked. I don't see them using Stuttgart, but okay.
Rammstein would have worked.
Sure.
But anyway, it's a great song. It still gets sampled today, like, and remixes are done all the time of it. It's they're really good covers of it, so pop music is still alive and kicking as far as a song nowadays.
Cool. And M is to thank for that.
Yes.
Yep. The one letter you can thank for that is M.
This song brought to you by the letter M.
Right.
And the number is 4-4. You know, the time signature.
Because it's in 4-4 time.
That's the time signature, Joe.
I got it. Okay, all right.
All right. Then I picked This Is It from Kenny Loggins.
Now I'm not so sure you're waiting to hear one good reason to try. But what more can I say? What's left to
Now, this is the Kenny Loggins that I first was introduced to, this kind of very light, poppy Kenny Loggins. I had no idea that he was going to take me through the danger zone and lead me to Pooh Corner.
Wow. Well said.
I worked on that for a while.
I'm sure you did. That's great. Because we had no idea what we were going to get from Kenny Loggins in 1979.
Yeah. Yeah. And he went... Full, like I said, he went straight to the danger zone, and then he grew up and grew out of that, and then turned into the Pooh Corner guy.
Wow.
Then my last one is Can You Picture That? From Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem.
I keep it at the Rainbow's Inn. I never think of money. I think of milk and honey. Grinning like a Cheshire cat. I focus on the pleasure. Something I can treasure. Can you picture that? Can you picture that?
This is the greatest Muppet-focused rock song in musical history, and I would not be denied on my list.
It's funny because I bet I know it if I heard it. I don't recognize it from just the title.
Really? It's the one they play in the Muppet movie in the church when they walk in.
Okay. All right.
And then that completes my list, Mr. Ibbett.
That is a great... it's a great list because it's... You're right. We do kind of run the gamut of... New wave, rock and roll, heavy metal. I kind of do stick in the new wave camp pretty heavily.
Here, but... I'm gonna do something so we are fully rounded out. I'm gonna go number 11.
Okay.
And I'm gonna put Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Oh, there you go. Now we have a nice little rounded out list.
When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's
No Reba?
Johnny,
not going to pull a Reba song?
No, because, no.
Dolly's Great Balls of Fire, not going to pull that one out on here?
I think Charlie Daniels fills the role very well. If I can just spell Georgia.
I don't know if you necessarily need to...
No, I'm going to do it so we can stick it in there.
Okay.
This is a live show, everybody. We're thinking on our feet.
You still haven't spelled Georgia right. Just so you know. And you just have Devil Went Down Georgia. Hey, people, here's how the sausage is made. All right, let's talk about next week on the show. Let's wrap up 79. Dude, that was great. 79 was awesome. And one more time, I'm going to tell people, if you disagree that 1979 was the greatest year in music, then I can't be friends with you anymore.
that's a hard ultimatum.
That's a little harsher than I wanted, but I feel like people need to at least acknowledge and say, okay, Brian, you're right. If not the best year in music, it's one of the greatest years in music. I'll settle for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Next week, Trent Reznor. So we get your Nine Inch Nails, and I imagine we're going to be listening to his soundtrack work as well, right? I hope so.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very much so.
I'm going to.
Yeah.
Cool.
And there are things that he's worked on that never got released. Some of them, one of them in particular, really breaks my heart.
Can't wait to hear that and hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, that one. Nice. When I discovered that he'd done this one particular piece, I'm like, oh, why didn't that get released?
Wow, really? Okay, well, cool. Well, I'm excited to start listening to that, because I'm familiar with two albums and, you know, a couple of his soundtracks, and so this will be a great a great new experience for me.
And if you click on the tab, you can see just how busy of a man he really was, because I've already done all the notes.
Oh, look at this. Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm going to need extra time to listen to all this. Very cool. All right. Well, so that is coming up next time on Soundography. In the meantime, if you want to reach out to us, we'd love to get your email. Email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us and reach out to us on Twitter as well at The Soundography, because unlike the Pretenders, we have a "the" in our Twitter handle.
Consistently.
Look at that.
Consistently.
Consistently in our Twitter handle, but notice that it's not thesoundography.com or thesoundographypodcast@gmail. It's our email address is just Soundography, but our Twitter is The Soundography because a couple of schmucks had it. The Soundography on Twitter. Soundography.com is where you'll go to find everything else you want about the show. You'll find show notes for every single episode we do, which include links to our playlists, a link to Amazon where you can pick up something from that year or that album or that artist that we talk about, all that stuff, as well as a way to support the show. Go to patreon.com/soundography and support Soundography. Keep it coming. You can support for as little as $1 a month, or if you really want to make us listen to something, you can do that too by giving us just a little bit more. Also, if you love the show, not only do we want to hear about it, but other people want to hear about it too, so that they can discover it like you did. Leave a good review, a positive review for us wherever you get your podcast. And if you're not happy with what you're hearing, let us know. I can't promise that we'll fix it, but we'll listen. We'll always listen. Always. That's going to do it for this edition of Soundography. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.